The invasion was not many hours old today before the Nazi propagandists were up to their old tricks. For the home population, the German broadcasters were inclined to take a sober view, telling the German listener that this was the real thing, that the Allies were landing in force, and that there was no denying that the existence of Germany was at stake. In their foreign broadcasts, especially those beamed to England and America, the Nazi propagandists were not so careful. Having given us the first news and thus gained some credibility, they were quick to try to exploit their position. I suppose they thought they were being clever, but they really were not. For example, throughout the day, they gave many more place names of where we had landed than did the Allied command. This part of their report was probably fairly accurate. It established where the fighting was before the Allies gave it. Having done this, the Nazi propagandists then let loose with their old tricks. We knew they would start exaggerating our losses. That's exactly what they did, though every Allied reporter on the scene emphasized how light were our initial losses. Another Nazi propaganda line broadcast all day was that we had begun the invasion on the orders of Moscow. Since the German people had been told in a great propaganda buildup that the so-called Atlantic Wall was impregnable, Goebbels had to think up some excuse during the day to explain how our forces got a foothold on the beaches and advanced inland. The excuse, emphasized in several Berlin broadcasts, was that it had always been German strategy to yield ground when that ground was of no importance, and that besides, where the Allies hit today was not the strongest part of the Atlantic Wall. Part of the German psychological war today was devoted to striking terror in the hearts of the occupied peoples, especially the French, a task in which Petain and Laval, be it said to their shame, aided their Nazi masters. The object, of course, was to frighten Frenchmen into helping the German defense and into refraining from helping the Allies. That was what Petain and Laval urged of their fellow countrymen. As for the Germans, they simply told the French they would be shot on sight if they went out on the streets after dusk or circulated during the day in any vehicles or even on bicycles. Some French believe that old Petain may have a last trick up his sleeve. That is, if and when the Germans are driven out of Paris, they think Petain may try to convoke the old chamber and Senate and try to restore the Third Republic and thus forestall de Gaulle and his French committee, while incidentally hoping thereby to save his own skin. A word about the German commanders our invading forces are facing. General Eisenhower's opposite number is Field Marshal von Rundstedt. He's 69, the oldest of the top German generals, and thus 18 years older than General Eisenhower. On the other hand, he is undoubtedly the best general Hitler has. I learned considerable about him when covering the German armies first in Poland and later in the German drive through Holland, Belgium, and France just 4 years ago. He made a great name in Poland and a great name in France and later in Russia. In Rundstedt and the other German general Blaskowitz, if not in Rommel, the Allied commanders are up against two of Germany's best generals. But as one who saw them operate in two campaigns, I imagine they're not as confident now as they were then. The opposition is different now, and so are their own once unbeatable forces.